Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 29 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Mike Zuzalo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming, including the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and all of our daily programming as well. Again, the address at willag.org. Find us in iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and on the NPR One app as well. Well, let's begin with this question. Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, what was your impression of this morning's USDA report on the grain stocks?
Well, I guess a couple of surprises jumped out at me, you know, when I look at the grain stocks reports, because all the quarterly numbers had generally been agreeing with last year's production estimate on soybeans. I didn't expect the soybean stock to come in as low as it did, nor did I expect them to see them adjust last year's crop down just a little.
And Mike Zuzalo, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is where the trade estimates probably brought up to me the idea that I think both the production side and the commercial side, you know, tagging into what Dale was trying to say too, is that I think we're all just so shell-shocked lately with these reports that our expectations are so low. And I think both the commercial and producer side was low on this report. And I think you see that in the range of estimates, Todd. I can't remember, and I haven't gone back and looked, but I can't remember a September report on grain stocks where both the corn and the beans actual number fell below the lowest trade guess on the Reuters estimates. And I'm guessing it was the same with Bloomberg and Dow Jones. And I think that just goes to show us how much our sites have been lowered as far as the USDA recognizing in real time, essentially, the demand side of the equation, especially in the corn. If you asked me going into the report what was the crop that would probably get the best report, I think I and most of other analysts, I'd be interested to hear what Dale has to say about it, is the soybeans, because it seems like USDA respects the demand side of beans a lot more. Much more sluggish on the corn. So if I had to add everything up, even with the wheat report for spring wheat being bigger and the reaction by the market on Friday being more negative in wheat, I think the corn got the best report because the expectations were the lowest for the corn and the ending stocks number came in below the lowest trade guess.
I can't really disagree with anything Mike said. You know, my focus going into this report, corn's always a difficult one because, you know, we're always dealing with this loose category called feed and residual that you know, you really can't target and pinpoint versus beans. At least you have documented usage via crush, via exports. You know, the one thing I guess I'm a little surprised that, you know, coming back here and looking at their numbers and basically, you know, they're taking their residual change here at this point in time, and the residual at this juncture now seems to be at 48 million bushel, totally uncharacteristic of what we've gotten used to in recent years. The only one that was really higher than that was 50 million back in the 14-15 crop year, but generally that residual has been somewhere down in between 10 and 20 million bushel and down as low as zero here in modern years. So to come up with a residual as high as they did was kind of a surprise to me. But my focus going into the report was on one number, neither one that one that doesn't matter a whole lot to producers across a lot of Illinois. It was the spring wheat, because I thought that was a number that probably had the biggest chance of either being bullish or bearish. In my own estimation, I thought even compared to trade expectations, you know, the spring wheat number could come in a little bit underneath even what the trade was looking for. You know, the unknown there being how big of an adjustment they were going to make on that harvested acreage number, and that ended up in the end being a lot less of an adjustment than I expected to see given the weather conditions we had in the Northern Plains this year.
Mike, you always keep your attention focused on the wheat. Say it needs to lead the marketplace. What do you make of those small grain numbers and the wheat figures that USDA released?
Yeah, I think that this could be a confirmation and verification of the cycle low that I think we made in the soft red wheat and the hard red wheat at the beginning of September. And I say that because my impression of this market in wheat, Todd, has been it's all about the hard red and soft red demand, and that the spring wheat and the drought and the Minneapolis wheat was a feature that came in and jolted the market around the July 4th holiday and then came around and said, you know, very little after that. But my assessment, I guess, overall is if it's about soft red wheat and hard red wheat demand and export demand, this was a good report on Friday.
Where did we finish out the month for corn and soybeans technically? Dale, have you taken a look at that today?
Well, you know, the month itself, you know, I think at this juncture, when you look at corn, we're really kind of a mixed bag in the very short term. But the one thing that I've seen here all month long with the way the corn market's acted, and they're is a pretty regular, as you know, 20 and 40 week cycle combination. And after having kind of a muddy affair in terms of the cycle count on corn over the course of the last year, to me, the breakdown we had in August started to finally make some sense of the cycle count. And I think that end of August low is going to end up being a 40 week low, and ending up here being relatively strong for the month really is kind of a plus. Although we do here, as we get into the middle part of October, have maybe a 6 to 7 week low coming due. So I like how I see this developing. I don't know that we're going to have any major move to the upside right at the moment. I think we've done enough for what we need to do now, and we'll see a little bit of a reaction down as we go into the middle of October. And timing wise, with that report on the 12th, would be a natural for some kind of a low around then. The beans themselves, you know, the performance to me continues to reconfirm that, you know, there's a possibility the low we put in bean prices back at the end of June, it was a 32-week low, but there's a possibility it could end up being a 2- and 3-year low, but we still got a lot of proving to do to really confirm that. But as a whole, I like the way the bean market acts generally. I think post-harvest, you know, is when we're going to have the better chance to make a move.
I'm looking at the chart. Is that down at that 906, 907 area in the November? Or are you talking about a different low? Am I right on where I'm seeing that number?
Well, I'm looking at a nearby futures contract right now, and that was right down against 902 or something like that, I think it was.
Yeah, I figured that. I didn't. I don't have the ability.
They look about the same, though.
Yeah. And then, Mike, this on soybeans, staying with that, it was an up month for the soybeans. However, it's an inside month as well, so it's not outside of the trade on either end, upper or lower, of the month of August.
No, but one thing we did do that I think is supportive, and I would agree with Dale in his analysis, that 950 level, we went down to 955, I think it was, this week for a low, and it might even been this morning. 950 is the 200-month moving average, plus or minus a half or three-quarters of a penny. That 940, 950 level is an important support level and has been for, you know, the better part of a year at this stage. And I think it was really nice to see us come through that price action after this report. And now the next thing we need to get above is that 980. And even last week's high of 987 would be kind of icing on the cake, technically speaking. And I think we need to do that relatively soon, mainly because of the fact that the soybean yields are coming in pretty strong. And most importantly, one of the things that maybe has kept the market from wanting to sell off too hard, other than this report today, was the fact that we've been dry in center west Brazil, Mato Grosso do Sul areas, and planting has gotten behind a little bit. But now the rains look like they're going to be generating, and some of the latest European model forecasts are pushing 5, 10, 11 inches over the next 5 to 6 days. And so that would really set them up to get caught up. And you lose possibly the fundamentally friendly aspect of the supply side in South America, planting delays while we're still grinding through harvest. So technicals to me in soybeans become even more important as we cross the threshold into October.
Yeah, so it's about supply side, I suppose, Dale, as opposed to where we are in the technical side in the end of the wash, but you have to put them all together. So what are you hearing really from the Western Corn Belt about soybeans and the harvest there? Have they begun really to get started at all? I know here in the state of Illinois, things sound awfully good.
Yeah, they are here good in Illinois and, you know, even points east. But when you go in and get roughly about to central Iowa and start to going west, you know, we haven't done a whole lot yet because the early part of this week, they were getting rain. Out in Nebraska, they've actually done more bean harvest than they've done in most of Iowa at this juncture or Minnesota. So we haven't heard a whole lot about yields out there at this juncture yet. So there's still some air of doubt. But the one thing I come back to here at this point that we've got to be a little bit careful about, I thought it was interesting today with the soybean stocks number that they actually came in and made a revision on last year's soybean crop, which I was really surprised about. But they lowered the yield for last year's crop, not a lot, a tenth of a bushel, but the mere fact that they felt they could lower that yield really draws the question to me, you know, with some of the yields that we're hearing in the early harvest so far, does it really justify that the yield for the current crop really can go up much above where it is today? Because even though yields are coming in generally better than people expected, you know, I hear more comments from people, at least in the early harvest, that the yields are good, but still not quite as good as last year. I just don't hear about these disappointing yield numbers. And when I go back into the internal data that we got with the September USDA report, when I look at historical pod count changes and historical pod weight changes, I came away from that with the idea that, you know, this quote-unquote 50 bushel yield number may be within about a half a bushel either way of where we end up at.
Yeah, so we have talked about that before. The pod weight looked awfully heavy. I called and asked them something about that. That is a weight that they actually back figure on to fit into the yield calculation they made, but you've apparently taken a look at it and it doesn't change very much.
Well, you know, that is true. You know, a lot of people take that number wrong, you know, and you really have to impress upon that number that the USDA, some people see and hear about. It's an implied number. And they never give you an actual pod weight number. Number one, in September, they don't know what the pod weight is because beans aren't mature yet when they collect the data out in the field. The only thing they've got to work with is pod counts themselves. So that implied pod weight number incorporates the yield expectations they get off of the model that basically is a result of the data they collect in the field, and also the yield result they get off of the farmer survey that they have. That's not actually an actual pod weight, just like the corn ear weight is not really an ear weight. It's an implied ear weight. And a lot of people don't understand that. The yield comes first, then you have the count, and then you come up with an implied number there. But still, as you go through a series of reports, you have a historical base to where you can work with this. Just like right now, when you look at pod count numbers, understanding USDA methodology and their history, pod count numbers actually go up from September to October and just a little bit more often than not in November. So you have to understand the history of those changes there, and then you can start to make some order and some sense out of them.
Just for clarification, when USDA made its adjustments to last year's crop, it dropped total production by 11 million bushels. Now, Mike Zuzulo, take up the corn for me, where you think we are today and what the changes really mean.
I think what it means is that we have probably pushed the basis as wide as we can get it at this point, especially in some of these areas along the rivers. I'm getting calls a lot right now. I'm sure Dale is too, about the widening of the basis in the rivers. And then areas close to the rivers in central and west central Illinois, and as you get closer to Hannibal, I think you're at a point now with this stocks report where you have, even with the good yields, you have a sense that the crop is no longer getting bigger. And I think that if we do get a little bit of harvest slowdown because the rains do come in some key points of the Corn Belt next week, that will take some pressure off of moving logistically the corn. And you also had some very, very poor transportation issues along the rivers, and the USDA made note of this in their grain transportation report last week about how the lower drafts and the low water levels were really hurting us as far as getting product moved from midstream down to the Gulf. So I think there's several things, and this report would be one of them, that would suggest to me that your basis levels are as wide as they need to be right now in the corn, Todd. I think the other thing that I go back to is I always use the wheat as a measuring stick for what the upside potential of corn is. This report doesn't change that. And with the fact that we've got the wheat corn spread now above a dollar in lead month futures, makes me feel like, along with the hogs and pigs report and the recent cattle on feed report, we're going to continue to chew through and walk our corn off the fields with our livestock. And so I think the demand is very strong. And our price in against South America in terms of corn is very competitive as opposed to where we're at with the wheat market in terms of our competitive nature. So I think corn's got a lot of positives to it that it may not translate into the market right away. But I think if I'm still being asked the question, what has more premium in the futures market versus the basis market, I think the corn has less premium than the beans. I'm more eager to hedge rallies in soybeans, even though USDA has now cut their carryover from 10 months ago. They've cut it from 480 million bushels to 301 million bushels. It's about a 40% cut in 10 months. And so, you know, how do you operate and manage your risk in that? And that's where you just have to work with some people like Dale and I think.
Yeah, it sounds like a nice way to say it has less downside risk than soybeans. Is that the way you summarize that?
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah.
And Dale, your thoughts?
You know, I think I would concur with that. You know, and the only thing you can really add back into it is just taking a look at the ratio between bean prices and corn prices themselves, you know, and that ratio is set. You know, soybeans have a bit more downside risk than corn, or corn has more upside potential generally than beans over the long haul. The one thing with the basis, you know, it's come back here, and some of the commercial people that work a little bit away from me here, you know, have just kind of scratched their head at the widening of the basis we've seen in some spots along the river in particular here. Yeah, the transportation has been there. But even they admit, you know, they are not going to buy much corn at these kind of basis levels. You know, the farmer's just going to choose to throw it in the bin. And, you know, when you look at corn futures and you look at, okay, I got a wide basis, and if I have a place to put it away, and frankly, we got to remember, we have no more corn in the U.S. this year right now, well, after we get done with the harvest, than we did a year ago. So we aren't going to have any real difficulty putting it away. But when you look at the wide basis, you look at the huge carrying corn, and you're sitting there going, wow, the money I can make purely off a storage hedge? You know, the corn market's just telling you not to sell anything as far as a farmer is concerned.
Is there very much difference between the commercial and the on-farm storage? I mean, there is, but is there a reason to do commercial storage?
Oh, I would think, you know, where we're working right now, you know, it's the kind of, when you look at the basis level, when you look at the carry that's in the futures market, and I know I didn't look this last week, but we were, you know, on Dece to March and Dece to May, we're up in there at about 70% of full carry. And we got to remember that full carry includes, I think, what is it, a nickel a month when you get into the delivery process against the futures. And commercial storage is generally cheaper than that. So, you know, you can't help but almost make money even at commercial storage in this game. A farmer can't.
I think the biggest thing, too, to keep in mind what Dale was pointing out with the corn, when it comes to the futures market, and I've heard this a lot in Chicago, is we're already penciling in bigger yields for the October report in the corn. And I think that's where I'm not ready to say it yet, Todd, but I'm getting more and more calls where producers are saying, I'm pretty certain my early beans are going to be my best beans. I'm wondering if that's not going to be the case with my corn as well. And so this is one of those years where we really do have to plan on maybe the second half of harvest not being as price negative, especially if we've got this kind of carry in the market, and we probably, I think, are already well over 170 for a national yield in the trades mindset in terms of the futures price right now and going into this October report. So it's gonna be a lot to feed the bear, in my opinion, in the corn market versus the bean market when it comes right down to it in the October numbers.
How much over 170?
I think there's a lot of people in Chicago right now thinking it's at least 172.
You know, when I did an exercise in this for Farm Week here right after the September report, and I went through that same process I did in soybeans, looking at the history of ear count data. And we know that from September forward on the USDA reports, my ear counts are the same or go a little bit lower. That's a given. I can't manufacture more ears other than what I have there for the September report. The other thing that happens when you look at the kind of ear weight we were still using at that point, you really came to the conclusion that corn yields, just looking at USDA history and trying to understand where we are today and put that in a historical perspective, the corn yield could obviously or arguably easily come down one, maybe two bushels from where they were on the September report. I've got a good friend that's done a lot of work over the years, and I'm talking about 40 years now of doing crop scouting of various different elks. And he's been in a lot of fields across the Midwest this summer, checking yield checks, looking at ears, trying to get some kind of a feel for kernel size. And he said, kernel size actually is pretty good. He said, it's obvious that the cool August helped us. But he said it doesn't look to him like it's as big as it was a year ago. And I think that's just a key ingredient. We just don't know yet. But his feeling was even yields probably have a better chance to come down from that 169.9 than to go up. And, you know, if that turns out to be the case when we see the October estimate, you know, that's going to be an interesting surprise for the trade. And for the October report, they should have ear samples, the USDA, I'm speaking, from about 35-40% of their plots that their enumerators visit to.
All right. Well, time to wrap this up. Just only a minute, so very quickly. Dale Durkles, any final thought from you?
Really, right at the moment, I think we're just going to struggle to go sideways here for a while until we get a little bit deeper into harvest and have a better feel for yield numbers for this. And that may take us through the October report. But I think once we get on the downside of the harvest, I see no reason not to think that these markets may not have some upside energy. It isn't going to be anything big necessarily. But December corn that traded here today at 355, I see a good chance before it goes off the board to get into the low 370s.
And Mike Zuzulo.
The two biggest weaknesses that I found at the end of this week, Todd, obviously was the way the wheat closed. So I'd like that to trim that loss very quickly starting next week and the new month that we're in. Second thing was the new record highs in the S&P. We're not seeing that investor flow back into commodities yet. We're talking tax cuts. We're talking not understanding inflation by the Federal Reserve. And I think it's keeping the investors out of the commodities. So we got a lot of work to do there as well.
Hey, thanks so much to both of you. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. And, of course, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our ag programming.